You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
That was unpleasant. On that short and not so sweet note, welcome into Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's winningest team. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent for Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. The Rockets worked all season long to get home court advantage throughout the NBA playoffs, particularly for the Western Conference Finals, the showdown we have all awaited against the defending champion Warriors. And after one game, it's now the Warriors that own home court advantage. That's because they came into Houston and won far too easily, 119-106 in Game 1 of the best-of-seven series on Monday night. Game 2, in an almost must-win game for Houston, it feels like, is Wednesday night at Toyota Center. James Harden was magnificent in this game, 14 of 24 shooting, 41 points. Chris Paul had 23 on 8 of 17 shooting. But ultimately, the Rockets, with their role players missing, just not nearly enough firepower for the Warriors, who Kevin Durant led them with 37 points. Klay Thompson had 28. Steph Curry had 18. What's most impressive, those three, Durant, Curry, and Thompson, combined for 83 points on above 50% shooting from the field. Those are perimeter players. And, of course, that's why they're the defending champions, that's why they're the three-time defending Western Conference champions, and they've reminded you in Game 1, certainly they played well, but why it's such a mountain for Houston to climb. Now, are the Rockets out of the series? No. At the end of the day, it was never likely that Houston would take the series by winning every home game. But to lose Game 1 with an atmosphere that was charged for all that was said this entire postseason about Toyota Center, the fans questioning, the intensity was there. The Rockets went up 9 points in the first quarter. Harden was magnificent. And slowly but surely, Kevin Durant just squeezed the life out of them. And the biggest challenge, you can mount a case for optimism for the Rockets in this series, even after tonight. I'll do that in Segment 2 and Segment 3. Segment 1, I want to spin it forward and talk about the psychological hurdle that, in my opinion, Mike D'Antoni, James Harden, Chris Paul, the team's leadership, is going to face over the next 48 hours. Because in the national media, in the questions they face at practice tomorrow, that narrative of inevitability, that's half the battle with playing the Warriors, is because they have so many teams mentally defeated so early, it's about to kick in big time. Because the Warriors, every narrative, fair or unfair, that has been out there about the Warriors, that, well, the regular season doesn't matter, they turn it up in the playoffs, it's one game, but everything played out exactly as many of the national narratives expected it to. Now, it's one game, there's a reason you have to take 4 out of 7 to win a playoff series. But the Rockets, they're going to be facing some uncomfortable questions. The fans, I don't think the fans are all of a sudden going to quit. But is the fan base going to collectively, casuals included, believe to the same extent on Wednesday night with an 0-1 deficit, with all the talk that's to come over the next 48 hours, that they did tonight? I hope they do, but I have some questions. I think playing the three-time defending West champions, it's only natural to have some doubts. And for the Rockets to have a game in which James Harden and Chris Paul collectively shot well over 50% from the field, 22 of 41, 64 points, 14 boards, 10 assists, and yet lost by double digits at home, it's a bitter pill to swallow. Especially because the Rockets lost this game, really, with what's been their strength for most of the season, which was the bench. When you look at the Rockets and the Warriors, you understand that even with James Harden and Chris Paul, the Warriors with Steph Curry are more top-heavy than you. You add Durant, Curry, Klay Thompson. We know what Draymond Green and Andre Iguodala can do at times, especially in terms of their defense leading to the transition game that makes Golden State and those three big shooters so lethal. You expect that the big guns for Houston are not going to be enough. Where Houston has had the advantage is that it has a deeper bench. Throughout the year, the role players they signed, P.J. Tucker, Luke Bamute, Eric Gordon, Gerald Green, Ryan Anderson even, we have sung the praises of these guys at various points throughout the season. Game 1, PJ Tucker and Luke Baibute were a combined 0 of 9 from the field, 0 of 4 from 3. Eric Gordon was 6 of 13, 3 of 7. It felt like some of his points, too many of those came in the fourth quarter after the game was largely out of reach. Gerald Green was 2 of 5 in 17 minutes. His defense was woeful. He may not be even playable in this matchup. I'll be very curious to see if maybe the Rockets try Joe Johnson in Game 2. I was a little surprised he didn't get a look in the second half. Ryan Anderson played 5 minutes in the first half, missed his one shot, wasn't close, defensively seemed lost. And what was the strength of the Rockets for so much of this year suddenly is a weakness. Luke Baibute, I said it during the second round, it's great that he's back. His defense is good. But to beat the Warriors, you need two-way players because they excel on both ends of the floor. And offensively, they know that when he goes in traffic, he is not finishing with any sort of authority. With a couple of exceptions in Game 5 of the Utah series, by and large, as he came back to start the second round, he has not finished well inside many times. He isn't even trying to. He's not taking contact on that shoulder. It's understandable when you dislocate it twice in a year. But the Warriors, you need two-way players. And right now, Luke was supposed to be one. He's not. Even though his defense is capable, his offense is such a huge zero that he's becoming unplayable. Gerald Green is essentially also a one-way player, just the other direction, because he gives you nothing defensively. I guess you could try Joe Johnson. That's about the only thing that maybe you could do, but you wonder if Joe Johnson, at 36 years old, has enough athleticism to play against the Warriors. Nene, they tried him for 6 minutes, and defensively, it just seemed the Warriors were able to get him switched onto Durant, Clay, Steph Curry, whoever it may be, far too easily. And so when the Rockets switch the way they want to switch, playing Nene is difficult. All of a sudden, Eric Gordon, I mentioned that, you know, until the game was out of reach, he didn't give them enough. But quite frankly, even if we look at Gordon's game results, 34 minutes, 15 points, 6 of 13 shooting, and twist that to be okay. Now, he certainly did not cancel out Klay Thompson, which I said going into the series was something big. Klay had 28 points on, I believe, 50% shooting, 40% from three. But even if we give Gordon due for what over 48 minutes was a solid game, even including Gordon, there's just not enough depth in Houston when guys like Baibute and Tucker are 0 of 9 from the field. When Nene, Gerald Green, Ryan Anderson are unplayable because all of those guys on one end of the floor are enormous liabilities. And for the Rockets, other than Joe Johnson, and it's tough to see a 36-year-old Joe Johnson being the savior, it's tough to do anything else than trust those guys. Trevor Ariza, actually, he looked okay when he played. He only played 23 minutes because he picked up 5 fouls just a couple of minutes into the third quarter. And so when the Warriors took control of this game, when it was tied coming out of the break, and they went up double digits. Now, the Rockets did close it to 7, I believe, going to the fourth. But really, the Rockets lost this game in the third quarter. Ariza couldn't play it because he was too foul happy. And sure, there were some shaky calls here and there, Scott Foster, Tony Brothers, but the Warriors can point to some of those as well. The bottom line is the Rockets just got outplayed. And you can mount a case that, especially guys like Ariza and Tucker. Tucker in the Utah series shot 58% from the field and 52% from three. He missed wide open threes tonight, had a big layup in the fourth quarter that somehow came out. If Ariza stays out of foul trouble, he was generally a positive player in his 23 minutes. Baibute, in Game 5 against Utah, he actually did slash, had 8 points in the first half when he attacked the rim. It's not like there's zero hope for a turnaround. Chris Paul and especially James Harden showed you a lot. Now, Harden did have a few turnovers down the stretch in the fourth quarter, but a lot of that's because the supporting cast. If the Golden State Warriors, with that Hampton Fives lineup, can diagnose exactly what you're going to do, it gets very difficult. And for the Rockets, with Harden, without much of a supporting cast to lean on, sure, there were a couple of careless passes, but by and large, the Warriors, it was a product of not enough help being on the floor. It wasn't as if Harden consistently made bad decisions. And again, James with 41 points on well above 50% shooting, 14 of 24 from the field. He's the reason you had a chance in this game. So if there's something to build on, hashtag playoff Harden, hashtag playoff CP3. Now, CP3, also, like Eric, kind of padded the stats a little bit after the game was over, so I'm not going to say he was anywhere near Harden's level. But certainly they were good enough combined. The problem was the supporting cast, and you have a ton of data that shows you that those guys are better than what they did tonight. And quite frankly, they should be better than some of the guys on the bench for the Warriors. I mean, you had Nick Young giving the Warriors 15 solid minutes in which he made 3 of 5 threes. Sean Livingston was very solid, 3 of 5, 5 boards in his 14 minutes. You had the Warriors' depth legitimately outplaying the counterparts for Houston. That shouldn't happen. So if you're the Rockets, you go back, you're going to see certainly a lot of defensive miscues. There are adjustments you can make, but it's going to take a lot of intestinal fortitude to block out the noise, to not worry if the fans aren't quite as lit at the beginning of game two, to not buy into that sense of dread inevitability that has really kind of permeated the entire NBA, Twitter included, since Kevin Durant went to the Warriors. You can logically make a case that the Rockets can be better in game two. The role players certainly can't be worse. As great as the Warriors stars are, look, Durant, Curry, and Thompson, they shot above 50% from the field combined and had 83 between them. Even by their standards, that's overachieving. You can make a case that in game two, and I think especially, you know, what was interesting in this game, Steph Curry was 8 of 15, but it didn't feel like he was much of a creator. It felt like it was really all Durant that was doing the heavy lifting in terms of one-on-one, breaking things down and making things happen for Golden State. The Rockets can shade more help to Durant. There were stretches, especially in the third quarter, this got out of hand, when the Rockets were far too content to leave Nene on an island against Kevin Durant. That's a terrible strategy when he is doing all the heavy lifting. So there are things you can do differently. You can force the ball more to Stephen Curry, who's coming off a grade 2 MCL. We saw him stretching that at times when he wasn't in the game. You can make a case, logically, that the Rockets took quite a punch from the Warriors. They still didn't get blown out. And that was with the Warriors playing a phenomenal game and the Rockets role players giving them nothing. Logically, you can make that case. But there's a difference between logic and your gut. And the gut of everyone around the league over the next 48 hours is going to be that this series is over. Everyone is going to go back to their initial instinct. When Kevin Durant signed with the Warriors back in July 2016, that this team is unbeatable. Now, we've seen through 92 games, 93 now, a lot of incredibly positive stuff, not just in terms of X's and O's, but desire, leadership from this Rockets team, Mike D'Antoni, James Harden, Chris Paul. But these next 48 hours are going to challenge them, less than 48 hours really, probably about 42 until they're back at Toyota Center getting ready for game two, like they have not been challenged before. I think and would like to see them rise to meet that challenge, but until they do, it's certainly fair to wonder. I'll leave it at that, because I think the biggest adjustment, certainly there's some X's and O's things they need to do differently, but I think the biggest thing the Rockets need to do between late Monday night, as I'm recording this, and Wednesday evening, is to catch their breath, emotionally regroup, and not buy into the narrative of inevitability that this thing is over. Because if the Rockets lose game two at home, let's be real, if they're down 0-2 going back to Oakland, that's pretty much all she wrote. I would love to be wrong, but this Warriors team is really, really good. The Rockets can get away with losing one at home. Their margin of error, while much, much smaller, it's not like the series is over. But the Rockets have got to respond Wednesday, and while there are some things tactically that they can do to improve, the biggest challenge is going to be between the ears, in my opinion, and hopefully Mike D'Antoni, James Harden, and Chris Paul are ready for that challenge over the next 40 hours or so. Now, to get back into the rest of the show are, went a little long on segment one, because really I think the psychological hurdle is by far the biggest takeaway, what the Rockets are going to have to deal with in terms of adjusting from game one to game two. As far as the latter two segments, one guy I did not mention in segment one, because we discussed so many things that went wrong, but Clint Capela tonight, now 12 points, 6 rebounds, that might seem a little pedestrian, but traditional stats don't do Clint Capela justice. 6 of 7 from the field, so of course his efficiency as always was good, but his ability to contest, even on Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, quite frankly, Capela defended Durant and gave him a harder time on his looks than anybody else on the floor. Now, Durant still made a lot of them because when Durant is on, he's the most unguardable player in the NBA, in my opinion. But Capela made him work, and that's about the most you can ask for. So, big picture, I think Clint showed you tonight that he can play against the Warriors. And if he can play against the Warriors on top of everything else we've seen this postseason, against Rudy Gobert, Karl-Anthony Towns, what we saw down the stretch of the regular season, he's a max player. There's no questions about it. Now, I think the Rockets would match no matter what when he's a restricted free agent this summer, because the Rockets being an over-the-cap team, it's not like you can just replace him somewhere else. It's either you pay him what the rate is, or you can't really replace him because you're over the cap anyway. So I think the odds were, even if some other team, for example, the Suns, rumored to throw a max offer at him, even if he didn't show up in this series, I think the Rockets would have no choice but to keep him given the dynamics. And truth be told, it is a small sample size. Let's be real, as big as these games are, you know, there is 92 games of data before this that matter a whole heck of a lot too. But Capela, he belonged. The Rockets, they're big guns. James Harden, Chris Paul, Clint Capela, they were there. The Warriors actually beat you because you didn't have enough in the supporting cast, and that's directly counter to what's made Houston a 65-win team throughout the year. That depth, for various reasons, is just not there right now. But Capela, I thought he showed you something special. Hopefully that's enough to spark a turnaround in this series. But even if it's not, yeah, you can absolutely see this core plus one more consistent scoring option, ideally LeBron James, but maybe Paul George, there's others. Really, I think what the Rockets need one more of, period, it'd be great if it's a star, you need one more, in my opinion, consistent two-way player. That's what I keep coming back to, is because so many of their options tonight were deficient on one end of the court. Now, Luke Bamute, some of it is injury-related, but let's not act like he's a substantially above offensive player even when he's fully healthy, and even if there's no issues with the shoulder. P.J. Tucker, he can make shots. We know what his limitations are. Now, he still counts, of course. P.J. is still a very quality player for you, but I would say ideally his role is capped at about 30 minutes. Gerald Green, great story, can be a microwave. Not a two-way player that's great for this matchup. Joe Johnson, 36 years old, certainly not. Eric Gordon, in this playoff run, has been surprisingly poor defensively, in my opinion. The Rockets, after James Harden and Chris Paul, it just feels like so much of this supporting cast is not diverse enough. And especially now with Luke's injury, no matter where you turn, either on the offensive end or the defensive end, there's a sore deficiency. Ideally, I would think, you know, LeBron James or Paul George could really solve that. But it doesn't even have to be someone of that level. Really, I think just one more guy you could trust would do so much, because ultimately that was the difference in this game, in my opinion. But the Rockets showed you, between Harden and Paul and what Capela gave you tonight, there's a foundation to build on. Now, in this series, can you turn it around? Yes, if Ariza stays out of foul trouble and he makes his shots, he was just 1 of 5 from 3, so he needs to hit more of those. If Luke Bamute can put aside the pain and trust that shoulder a little bit more, and go all the finish through traffic. I don't know that Gerald can pick it up, because his deficiencies generally are what they are. It's hard to see him being much better defensively. That's why I wouldn't be personally surprised if they were to try Joe Johnson. But Ariza, Luke, PJ Tucker, in series, if one or more of those guys can figure it out, and of course Ariza staying out of foul trouble too, then combine that with what you had from Harden, Capela, and to an extent, Chris Paul, there's enough that, yes, you can challenge the Warriors, especially when you factor in, even by their standards, I think Durant, Thompson, and Curry being above 50% shooting, 83 points between them, is a little much, even by those standards. But for the Rockets, it's tough to take a lot of positives out of tonight. Certainly James Harden was mentioned early on. I mean, James's stat line speaks for itself. 41 points, 14 of 24 shooting. He was making the step-back threes. If there was one nitpick you could have in Harden's playoff run, it's that against Utah, the final two games, 7 of 22, 8 of 22. And he answered that tonight. 5 of 9 from 3. He was making the step-backs. He made great plays in isolation. A few too many turnovers late in the game. How many did he have for the game? Well, just 4, but it felt like they came at very inopportune times. But by and large, James offensively, he cooked. He answered the bell. If anything, you could question why he only played 35 minutes, but I think the usage of James was so high that, quite frankly, he was gassed. We saw that late in the third quarter, and it's not a level of fitness. It also goes back to the role players, because it wasn't just 35 minutes. It was 35 minutes in which James had to do an absurd amount of heavy lifting because he was getting so little help. If you get him more help, you can maybe bump his minutes to 38 or 39 and mitigate those deficiencies as well. Then you take the 30 minutes you got from Clint Capella, even against the Warriors, even in the Hampton Fives. He was holding up. They took him out in the fourth quarter, but really they took him out late in the fourth quarter because by that point they were down, 10, 12 points with about 4 minutes to go, and it was just a math thing. They needed all three-point shooters. At that point, the pick-and-roll game of Clint Capella, there just wasn't enough time for the Rockets to catch up that way. But you can mount a case for optimism. Capella, Harden, Chris Paul, what you saw from those guys tonight, it was pretty good. Your big guns showed up. Your role players didn't. And ultimately, for the Rockets on the offense, that's the story. For the Rockets on defense, I touched on it earlier. Some of the things Warriors going to Warrior. They're incredibly good. They're the most talented team in the history of the NBA. They won 73 games. They added Kevin Durant. They're filthy. What's amazing to think, Steph Curry, off a lesser MCL injury 2 years ago, you want to think about how good that team is. Before they added Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, limited by the MCL, not as explosive. They still came back from 3-1 down to beat an Oklahoma City team in Western Conference Finals that had Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. And then they had a 3-1 lead in the NBA Finals and probably won that, if not for Draymond losing his cool, which you saw again tonight. That's just Draymond being Draymond. And getting suspended a game in the NBA Finals when they blew a 3-1 lead. And then LeBron having just an incredible Game 7, capped off by the Kyrie shot in the final minute. If not for that, the Warriors win the title that year without Kevin Durant. That's how good they are. Now add Kevin Durant to that group. It's a lot of this you do have to tip your hat. It's ridiculous. I understand the hate for Kevin. I still don't like or respect the decision myself. But at this point, it is what it is. You can't complain about, the parody or it's unfair or whatever. You just got to try and make the best of it, and the Rockets, you have to adjust. I think from what I saw tonight, the key, if Durant gets that hot, and you can make a case that maybe he won't be in Game 2, you have got to send a second defender and live with the results. Quite frankly, the Warriors overall, 13 of 33 from 3, that's 39%. That's good. It's not crazy good. It's not like they really just kind of beat you up. They, again, below 40% from 3. Rockets out-rebounded them by 5. It's not like the Warriors just up and down the roster kicked your butt. Generally, when the game was being decided, and he missed a few in the fourth quarter late, but again, the overall box score can be misleading, it was Kevin Durant making the plays one-on-one, and even when the Rockets were dialed in defensively, he made some really, really tough shots. And on those, I don't think Ariza, P.J. Tucker, Luke Bamuche played poor defense, and especially did not Clint Capella when he got switched on to Durant. I thought he did a fabulous job. Durant just made some incredible shots. Tip your hat. The biggest adjustment I would make going to Game 2 is to send help. When Kevin Durant, 7 feet tall, I know he doesn't like to call himself that, but he is. And that kind of perimeter game and an improving handle gets going like he did, the only way that you can slow him is to force the ball out of his hands. And yes, the odds are that that means another good shooter is going to get a look somewhere. Now, maybe you could funnel it to Iguodala or Green. That's the ideal. Odds are it's probably going to be Thompson, Curry, Nick Young, someone better, because the Warriors' ball movement is great. But, I mean, even Curry was, what, 1 of 5 from 3 tonight? I would live, after what happened tonight, and Game 2 being a must-win for the reasons we discussed earlier, I would live with giving up more open threes if it meant forcing the ball out of Kevin Durant's hands when he gets going like he did. Because there's no defense for what he did. And quite frankly, with Curry limited off the MCL, I would almost dare them to say, hey, can he make plays one-on-one off the dribble on a regular enough basis? Can I know he shot 50% tonight and he made some plays off the dribble inside the arc, but can he sustain a higher usage rate? I would think about forcing that. Because if Kevin Durant is able to get in rhythm the way he was tonight, the Rockets, they just don't have enough firepower if the role players don't get going. And especially in the case of the bench, Luke Bamute, Gerald Green, it'd be nice to have those things turn around, but it's tough to see Gerald's defense getting a lot better. It's tough to see Luke Bamute coming off the shoulder, suddenly becoming a different guy than the guy he's been really since coming back from the shoulder that's not fully trusting it. It's tough to see Ryan Anderson suddenly getting confident and catching fire. So really, it's tough to see, you know, you can hope, but for an extreme turnaround, you can have a marginal turnaround. It's not like either you fix it or you don't. But I think the odds are, it's not like it's going to be night and day in terms of an improvement from your supporting cast. And you also may not have Harden scoring 41 and 14 of 24 again. So you've got to do something different defensively. And in my opinion, the best thing you can do is challenge someone other than Kevin Durant to be the guy making plays one-on-one. And if the Warriors, if they beat you with ball movement, shooting, there's a good chance they will, because that's what they do. But I could live with that a little bit more than Kevin Durant, who's, when he gets going, probably the most unstoppable player in the NBA, just shredding you and every defender the way he did tonight. Even Klay Thompson, as great as he is, it's not like Klay is really that much of a creator. I mentioned one of my keys to the series, not like Klay Thompson get going. Well, they certainly failed at that. Lost him in transition a few key sequences too, and that's what you can't do against this team, is let him get going. That's when they have kind of those, what feels like just gut punch runs. But ultimately, I know the Rockets switch on everything, but that run in the third quarter, there were too many possessions where Nene alone against Kevin Durant, that's not going to end well. I would rather be beaten another way than beaten like that. And ultimately, we'll see what the Rockets do. But I think, as I said leading off, the bottom line is Game 2 has to be treated as the season. I think you can mount a case for optimism. There are things they can do. The Warriors may not shoot that well again, especially the big three. The Rockets role players almost certainly can't play that poorly. Ariza shouldn't take himself out with fouls again. You can make a case for how you can still compete in the series. And if you win Game 2, if it's tied 1-1 going back to Oracle, honestly, that's where most people expected it to be. Odds are you're probably going to drop a game at home, so while your margin of error is significantly reduced, it's all still out there in front of you. It's one game at a time. Yes, you have to beat the Warriors 4 times out of 6, but a playoff series like this, every game is its own entity. It's not winning 4 out of 6. Can you win the next one? Yes, I believe the Rockets can, and then you have 3 days off to regroup before the Sunday Game 3 at Oracle Arena. If the Rockets get that game Wednesday, and then you can make further adjustments, maybe get a little bit more health in the case of Luke Bamute, who knows? Maybe you can build off of that. But step one is going to be responding very quickly by Wednesday's Game 2. The Warriors landed quite a haymaker. Logically, can the Rockets respond? Yes, there are reasons to believe that they can be better. And I would argue that the Rockets had more things go wrong for them in Game 1 that should have gone right than the Warriors did. I think the Rockets' baseline for improvement, it's a little bit easier to see a path for Houston than Golden State. The flip side of that is Golden State won by 13 and it wasn't even really that competitive. It never felt like in the final 5 minutes there was really a chance. I think Houston had a couple of possessions down 9. And that was about as close as they really got. I think maybe 1 it got to 7. But ultimately, so I think there's more room for improvement for Houston, but I think there's certainly a lot Golden State showed you tonight, and now you have that narrative of inevitability starting to build again. The 73-win team that added Kevin Durant, The Rockets have enough X's and O's basketball talent to counter, in my opinion, but it's not just about talent when you're dealing with the Warriors and Kevin Durant. It's about the mental side of the game as well. And while I wouldn't say it's a weakness for the Rockets by any stretch, this is going to challenge them like never before. And hopefully they have the answer that we've all seen throughout the year. They've responded very well when facing adversity, and it would not shock me if they do it again. But I think this is a different style of adversity, even compared to what the Rockets have showed us through the first 93 games. So with that, I think we can wrap up tonight's show. If you made it through this relatively depressing episode, I thank you. Hopefully Wednesdays will be a little perkier. But for now, I'm going to sign off, try and get some rest. Hopefully y'all do as well. If you want more commentary from me in the interim, best place is on Twitter. I'm at Ben Dubose. Show is at Locked On Rockets. We also got an email, lockedonrockets@gmail.com, a Facebook at facebook.com/lockedonrockets, and a website at lockedonrockets.com, where you can access all of our content, prior episodes. You can find streams to subscribe to us, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone. You can find links to many of our podcast homes on the website, and also you can search about at wherever you prefer listening to podcasts. Odds are you can find Locked On Rockets. Subscribe to us, leave us a 5-star review. That's the best way we can remain viable as the only daily podcast covering the NBA's winningest team, at least to this point. Well, I guess the odds are good, given the 6-game differential. Rockets probably be the winningest team no matter what, unless they get embarrassed in this series, and I'm not willing to go there just yet. We will evaluate that again Wednesday night. But of course, being the winningest team in the regular season doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot. What matters is finding a way to take 4 out of 7 in what is now 4 out of 6 for the Rockets moving forward after the 119-106 loss in Game 1. So for now, I'll sign off. Have a good night, Houston, and hopefully Wednesday brings better things.